Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the Son of Man. Daniel chapter 7 describes the Son of Man who came from heaven, received worship from all nations, and rules a kingdom that will never be destroyed. Jesus uses this title to affirm that he is fully human and fully divine.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
This will not have a happy ending. This is Wretched Radio. As we span the globe, let me take you to America. You say, Friel, we're in America. I know. The point is, we're going to take a look at the Labor Department statistics of men not working. Even worse, they're not looking to work. It's not because they're necessarily lazy. They've quit looking because they can't get a job. The number is 1 in 3 men have stopped working. They don't look for work anymore because it is futile. The statistics are not good. These are the lowest numbers since 1948. The labor market continues to weaken. Most job opportunities are typically dominated by women. So it's healthcare, it's education. Women flourish in those sectors. So the job market for them is just fine. But in the meantime, male-dominated industries like manufacturing or transportation or mining, they're just going down the tubes, and guys can't find work. And in the meantime, we've got the H-1B visa program. That's working just fine as we bring in so many workers from overseas. When we've got so many people in this country who are willing to work, they just can't find work. And then we're told, well, we need to bring in foreign labor because Americans won't work. That is just not true. Furthermore, if they're not trained for those jobs, then let's start training them. This is not good for a nation because men, they're going to channel their energy somewhere. Now, it won't be a good channeling, usually. Not many men who stay unemployed for a long amount of time do a lot of volunteering work, go about the neighborhood. You know, I'm just going to start trimming the neighborhood's lawn. Trim their bushes. I'm going to edge their lawn for them. They don't do that. Where does it typically go for most men that aren't working because we are supposed to be working? It will go towards something nefarious or just something totally worthless, like video games, just constant video gaming or watching things on the internet that nobody's eyeballs should be looking at. Or even worse, taking it to the streets. They've got to channel that energy. And without labor, it's probably not going to squirt out in a very good direction. Let me take you to Great Britain. I don't know if you saw this story. This is just, if it is accurate, so agitating. I'll just describe the scene for you. Well, I'll let the Daily Mail do it. A university student, I think the kid was like 20 years old, was repeatedly stabbed by a man with a Sikh, S-I-K-H, ceremonial sword. It's an 8-inch blade, just in case you don't have one of your own. 18 years old, was on his way home from a night out when he was attacked by a stranger, Vikram Digwa, 23 years old, with a Shastar blade. The guy who murdered him, who stabbed him to death, was caught on camera saying, "I'm a bad man," before the fatal attack, jurors were told. He's now on trial, accused of murder, alongside his mother, who assisted him in getting rid of the knife so that her boy wouldn't be arrested for stabbing somebody to death. Now, what makes this story egregious is the fellow is claiming that the reason he stabbed the young man is because the young man, the university student, he offered him some sort of racial epithet. In other words, he said something that offended him, is his claim. And the reason that this is a worthy story is because the police came and the boy was bleeding on the street. And rather than immediately helping him, because the individual who stabbed him claimed that he had said something racially offensive to him, they put the boy in handcuffs and he bled out on the street. Why? because you can't have a racist running free, even with his guts bleeding out. I think this is from Not the Bee. I think their comment was demonstrating racism is the greatest crime that you can commit. By the way, the laws in Great Britain, they're just getting tighter and tighter and tighter. After he was stabbed, he tried to climb a fence to escape his assaulter, who was aggressively pursuing him, leaving a trail of blood. Police were called to the scene, but arrested the victim after the guy with the 8-inch blade claimed he'd been racially abused. Now, that was an accusation. Hey, he said something, as if somehow that justifies stabbing somebody four times to death. But the police here, oh, racist, well, racism, that's the real bad guy. Not the guy who stabbed him, but the guy who said something racially charged. He suffered four stab wounds, including two in the back of his legs, one in his lung. The Daily Mail points out it's illegal to carry a knife in Britain, but Sikhs have a religious exemption that allows them to carry them. Hesitate to share this story because I know that this is a hot potato, and I'm not going to comment because I don't know. I'm just going to share a story that is for your consideration. You do with this as you see fit. I know that people are on both sides of the aisle of this subject. So I'm just sharing because it seems that this was a valid enough study that it should at least warrant our attention to some degree. It was a meta study. They take all of the studies that were done and they put them together to kind of give one narrative, because studies will tend to focus on this aspect, that aspect, another aspect. Well, this puts everything together regarding the subject of vaccines and autism. I'm not commenting, I'm just sharing. This is from the Journal of Independent Medicine. It says it's devoted to advancing unbiased, multi-specialty medical research with a focus on alternative therapies, repurposed drugs, medical ethics, and healthcare policies. It says that it operates without funding from pharmaceutical companies or government agencies. So they claim, like we all do, independence and objectivity. What did the study results report? New onset of ASD, so this is autism spectrum, before age 9 included the following: advanced parental age, premature delivery, genetic variants, sibling recurrence, maternal immune activation, in utero drug exposure, environmental toxicants, gut-brain axis disruption, and here it comes, cumulative routine childhood vaccination. That's a bit of a bomb, because this debate has been going on now for quite a while. The report itself says this is not conclusive. They just state these conditions highlight a need for independent longitudinal studies assessing the safety of the full cumulative pediatric vaccine schedule and should guide future research and policy decisions aimed at mitigating the growing autism burden. They do not say that it proves that there is a link between vaccinations and autism. But they are saying there's enough data here that there should be some serious, intense work done to determine, is there a connection? Most medical professionals say no. There are a lot of parents who would say yes. The debate continues. In the meantime, in Canada, speaking of health news, a Canadian physician thought that assisted suicide might be a good option for babies. Oh, man, Scylla. You know, babies who can't speak, who can't formulate a sentence to express, you know, their desire to, say, live. A member of the Quebec College of Physicians stated that MAID, this is their death program in Canada, where they will help kill you. It's not assisted. They're taking your life at your request. But it may be appropriate, according to this physician at the Quebec College of Physicians, may be an appropriate treatment for babies from birth to 1 year of age with severe deformities. Oh, I see. So suddenly they're deformed. They're not human. The Netherlands has been leading the way, by the way. They've been doing this since 2005. So Canada, you're on your way. But in the meantime, the Netherlands, they have been terminating the lives of children under the age of one since 2005. If a baby is born with severe medical conditions, then we, the big people, because it would be really expensive or really challenging or quite a burden, we can make the decision for them that they will die. I think there's a name for that. Not the least of which, frankly, would be bully. That's the big people imposing their power on the little people. Okay, one last story about news, health news specifically. I only share this. It's so dopey. I only share this because this is the psychological industry. This is the big psychiatric industrial complex. What are they recommending these days for group therapy? This is very sophisticated. I'll try to just dumb this down as much as possible. Actually, that's impossible because this is about as dumbed down as possible. The big words are Dungeons and Dragons. That's right. To help people with their mental and emotional issues, they're recommending Dungeons and Dragons, followed apparently by some bloodletting, is what the prescription is. This is Wretched Radio.
Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. If you're a man, you're trying to figure out what it actually means to be one, and you've probably noticed, well, the world doesn't make it easy. They say be strong, but not too strong. Lead, but you don't want to be toxic. Look, it's a lot of mixed signals, and after a while, you just stop listening to any of it. And the thing about it is, scripture is not confused. God has a lot to say about what it means to be a man, and Dr. Adam Tyson unpacks that every week on Way of Manhood. Dr. Tyson is a pastor. He's also a professor at the Masters University, and he's one of our Fortis Institute fellows, and he's not interested in cultural trends. He's interested in what the Bible actually says. And if you're an ongoing monthly gospel partner of Fortis Institute, it is your support that helps make content just like this possible. If you've ever been impacted by this ministry, would you prayerfully consider becoming an ongoing monthly gospel partner today? All you have to do is go to fortisinstitute.org right now to find out what it would look like in your life to do just that. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel.
No retreat. That's the name of Fortis Institute's Spring Match campaign, and we chose that name for a reason. The church has been quietly backing up for years. A doctrine gets a little uncomfortable, a truth sounds a little too exclusive, so we set it aside. And before long, the gospel sounds more like an apology than an announcement. Fortis Institute is determined to push the other direction, to encourage churches to hold fast to hard truth and to proclaim the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ rightly and loudly. That's why we're inviting you to join us on the No Retreat Spring Match campaign. Right now, through the end of May, every dollar you give is matched, dollar for dollar, and your gift will help launch two new podcasts, publish Todd Frill's new book, Go Serve Your King, through HarperCollins, and fund gospel proclamation on college campuses. The gospel doesn't move backward, and neither should we. You can find out more right now at fortisinstitute.org/donate.
Okay, so if you admit it, you're like the rest of us. You've got 47 streaming services, and you're paying for at least six of them. But somehow, every night, you sit down on the couch and you say, there's nothing to watch. Meanwhile, Fortis Plus is sitting right there for free on your Roku, your Fire TV, Apple TV, Android. Hundreds, maybe even thousands of hours of content on theology, marriage, parenting, manhood, cultural issues, stuff that actually matters. And you know what? We keep adding more. Yeah, of course, you could scroll through Netflix for like 45 minutes looking for something that won't rot your brain, or you could pull up Fortis Plus and learn something that'll actually help you be a better husband, dad, or Christian by the time the credits roll. Download the Fortis Plus app right now. It is absolutely free, and it's on your TV. And unlike that true crime documentary that you've watched three times at least, it might actually do you some good.
Attributes of God. You can trust in God. Malachi chapter 3 verse 6 tells us that God is immutable. He does not change. He is faithful to fulfill his promises, just as much today as when the Bible was written. you can rest assured that His word is still true. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Well, on second thought, maybe Dungeons and Dragons isn't such a bad idea. This is Wretched Radio, and not kidding, even institutions like Johns Hopkins University has its own Dungeons and Dragons therapy group. It's called Social Skills Quest. People play the game for half a session, and then they use the other half of the session to talk about playing the game for the first half of the session, and that's supposed to help them with their mental and emotional issues. Yeah, I'm not kidding. That's the best they have to offer when it comes to therapy. The other alternative, of course, which would be worse, are the overprescribed psychotropic medications that are getting people hooked and affecting them forever. Recently, the Secretary of Health, he decided it's time to address this issue and try to start helping people get off of these psychotropics. And when Mr. Kennedy spoke, he said, I have seen people that come off of heroin to that detox. It's nothing compared to people coming off of these psychotropics. And recently in Washington, the MAHA Institute, M-A-H-A Institute, he spoke there and he announced, hey, we're going to actually start trying to detransition people off of medication. I don't know that detransition is the right word, but I find it kind of funny and ironic. And they're going to spend money to help people because it is a beating to get off of these drugs. And that is usually not discussed. They also had four young people share their testimonies and their stories. You, Mom and Dad, you need to know this. You need to be aware of these stories. Yes, they are anecdotal, but they get compiled one on top of the other until it becomes an actual force that needs to be reckoned with. This is just one of those stories.
Yeah, my name's Cameron Labar. I was diagnosed at age 9 with anxiety, OCD, and Tourette syndrome. And we went into a neurologist office in northern New Jersey and walked out with a prescription for Paxil. And so I started that. That SSRI when I was 9. I'm already on the verge of tears. It's ridiculous. But this is a win, honestly, that I'm even feeling this now because it was really hard to even do this before.
That is really telling. By the way, if it sounds a little bit fast, Jimmy, what did you crank this thing up to?
1.5 speed.
All righty then. So for the poor people who might be listening to this at 1.5 speed,
right?
This is at 3.0 speed.
That's right.
This young man, 9 years old, went into a doctor's office, comes out with Paxil. And he just said that he's about to cry telling the story because I think he's in his 30s now. And he's happy that he can cry because he wasn't able to feel that emotion for so long. Because that is what so many of those psychotropics will do. They just flatten you out. That's why Greg Gifford, I'm telling you, Life Without the Numb, it's still a great free resource at FortisPlus.org. You can watch it. You should watch it. It wouldn't be a terrible thing to show in your Sunday school class, I'll tell you that much. Or you can get his book. It's still selling really, really well. Lies My Therapist Told Me.
But anyways, I'm 35 now. I've been on an SSRI. I was on Paxil for about 20 years and then, switched over somewhere around 2020 to other SSRIs. But I've been on SSRIs for collectively almost 26 years now. My adolescence, I had other antipsychotics and other things that I took for the Tourette's. But I was always told that I had a chemical imbalance and that this was treating that. And it wasn't just the doctor that told me that, right? It was also the proxies of the doctor, which were my parents, my family. So, growing up, entering teenage years and even into adulthood, I was conditioned and I believed that I needed this and that I was treating something very targeted to help me function. And it took a really long time for me to realize that the things that I thought were character traits about me, being tired, drowsy, forgetful, numb, indifferent to going out and doing things or to having friends or to starting a relationship. It took a really long time for me to end up figuring out that those weren't character traits. Those weren't parts of my personality, but that those were side effects of a medication. And it wasn't until, about 3 years ago, I stumbled after, hours and hours of watching videos and viewing, message boards and things like that. I stumbled across a video from Mark Horowitz and he's here in this room too. And he'll be speaking later, I think, but that helped me to understand that side effects are so common and that this isn't, it's not a part of who you are necessarily, but it also, another point I really want to make in this whole process is I was never approached or we ever had a discussion about an off-ramp or a reducing of of these medications. It was just every night I would take it, but there was never a discussion of when is the finish line. You know, when am I done taking this? That discussion never happened. And anytime I tried to go off, you know, there were a couple times when I was a teenager, a couple times during college. Anytime I tried to go off and follow doctor's advice of, okay, cutting a tablet in half and then waiting and seeing for a couple weeks, it would throw me into such a severe panic and response that, you know, I would immediately go back up on the dose. And, you know, when you go and you talk to a doctor about that, a very common response is that, hey, that is a part of your underlying condition and that you probably need the medication. But like I was saying, it wasn't until I, you know, stumbled across a video from Mark that suggested that these, in reality, these responses are withdrawal symptoms and that this isn't part of some underlying, you know, part of who I am. And it took me 20 years to find that out. So trying to deal with that, and right, I'm still going through the process of tapering. I've been tapering about 3 years now. Wow. Down to about 7.5 milligrams of Lexapro. It's probably gonna take me another 3, 4, or 5 years to get the rest of the way, just given how
wow.
drugs work. But imagine the, you know, the fury, the rage of like, I could have figured this out a lot sooner, right? And that the way I'm functioning now on this lower level of a dose, I've been on this level of a dose since I was, you know, in adolescence, basically. But this, the way I'm functioning now, I could have functioned as a human being all along, right? And I could have had friendships, and I could have gotten numb, and I could have formed relationships. I don't know how I'm doing on time. Sorry, no,
you're good.
Okay, you're but
almost
okay, almost. But this is, you know, these are the things that I'm now struggling with. This is this portion of now that I've gotten through a really hard part of withdrawal, and I'm kind of taking a break over these last few months. Now I'm dealing with the realization that I've missed a lot of life, and a lot of my experience year after year has been discounted and affected by these drugs, to where I never got to experience the full range of emotions and feeling. Of being human. And that's been really, really hard. I'm here, not necessarily because I want to be, but because of how important this really is and how much it's affected me, and how much I'm, you know, really grateful as well that there's, you know, an audience to listen and members of, you know, members of Congress to help get this going. So I'm really grateful to be here, and thank you.
Amazing. And that's one of millions of stories, honestly, that simply do not get shared. What it does to you while you're on that medication and then getting off of that medication. Here's just one more young woman who has been so negatively impacted by psychotropics.
So I have a brain injury from antidepressants. At just 7 years old, I was prescribed psychiatric drugs. I was far too young to understand what they were, let alone the lasting impact they would have on my developing brain. It started in the second grade when a teacher noticed I was fidgety, distracted, and not fully keeping up academically.
Uh-huh.
My parents were advised to take me to see a psychiatrist for an ADHD evaluation, and I was...
Oh, for being fidgety. A classic case of ants in her pants. They take her to a doctor.
Quickly diagnosed, labeled, and medicated. They even told me I had a learning disability. Ironically, the drugs later created the very disability they claimed that I had. It began with ADHD stimulants like Adderall and Ritalin, and I still remember how agitated and moody they made me feel. This was completely out of character for me, as I was a happy, sweet, silly kid. Adverse side effects were interpreted as new diagnosis, and more drugs were prescribed to treat the problems that the medications themselves had caused. This spiraled into a prescription cascade of antidepressants, benzodiazepines, mood stabilizers, and antipsychotics, all before my 10th birthday. None of it ever felt right, but I was a child and I didn't have the words to explain what was happening, and I didn't have the authority to challenge it. My completely normal childhood behavior was pathologized. I wasn't in crisis. I wasn't struggling or acting out. I was simply a fidgety, shy, sensitive little girl who didn't fit the mold of how a child was supposed to behave in a classroom
yep.
setting.
Education.
Throughout my teens, every drug-induced effect that made me feel terrible was blamed on my so-called underlying disorder. As I got older, I found online forums of people describing their harms from antidepressants and began to realize the drugs might be the problem. I brought my concerns to my doctor and asked if the medications could be making me worse or even cause brain damage. He insisted that wasn't possible. He was the expert and he knew best, and told me it was just my OCD and anxiety getting worse and that I needed higher doses of the SSRI to treat it effectively. My inner reality was dismissed at every turn, and the very harm I was told could never happen is exactly what I eventually lived through. As I got older, most of the other psychiatric drugs were eventually stopped, but SSRIs remained the one constant throughout my entire life. After college, at 23 years old, I wanted to see who I was underneath the chemicals that had been hijacking my brain for all those years. Although I had been on antidepressants my whole life, all while my brain was literally developing, my doctor tapered me off in just 6 weeks, which was far too fast. But my doctor wasn't acting recklessly. He was following the standard medical guidance doctors are taught to use. What followed was a severe full-body neurological crisis, a nonstop living nightmare of physical and psychological torment and suffering I didn't know was humanly possible. My brain felt like it was on fire. Waves of visceral terror and violent inner agitation ripped through me. I was crawling out of my skin for hours each day. I rocked back and forth in the fetal position on the floor, screaming in excruciating pain. Rage surged through me that was completely out of character, as I've never had this type of anger. I was always gentle and kind, but it brought out a violence in me that never existed. My brain and body were malfunctioning, feeling like I was being poisoned. It was an attack on my nervous system. Simply being alive felt unbearable. When I went back to my doctor and told him I was in withdrawal, I was told antidepressant withdrawal doesn't exist, that the medication was out of my system, and my symptoms were proof I needed the medication. His credentials and expertise automatically outweighed my lived experience, and the very injury caused by the drugs was used to justify putting me back on them. I spent months going in and out of hospitals, repeatedly dismissed. No one believed me. I had no medical support, and I became completely bedridden and unable to care for myself. After many torturous months of nonstop suffering, I had no choice but to reinstate the antidepressant, even though I felt as though it was poisoning me.
Tragic. Tragic. True stories. Real people being so negatively affected by a group of people that you they have every appearance of trust. The buildings, the lab coats, the diplomas on the wall. And yet causing so much harm via psychotropics. Suddenly Dungeons and Dragons doesn't sound so bad. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.